Hey everybody, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
So this week, episode 10, we made it, guys. We're there. The Holy Ground. I think we're officially a podcast now. I don't know how that works. But so this week, we're going to be talking a little bit about some changes this month, some the last few months to the tournaments, how they're handled, how they're going to be distributed, things like that. You'll see. We'll talk about it in a minute. And after the break, we're going to come back and talk about deck construction. We also have the contest winners. We'll be talking about that at the end of the episode. You got to listen to the whole thing. So guys, how you feel about the changes to tournaments?
I don't know. So in case people didn't see, we'll probably put the link up. Yeah. Star City has changed the way IQs are being run slightly. It's nothing too major. It's just, they're no longer giving out open points for IQ participation or top eight. It's strictly you win to get the invite to the Invitational.
Yep.
And like a 1K has two slots to get you in, like first and second get invites, and that's it. That's the only way to play the Invitational now. Starting in 2016, let me clarify.
And they got rid of the 2Ks or the Elite IQs as well.
Right.
Yeah, so those are just done.
Yeah. It's
they went the way of the Classic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So these are all sort of changes that are being made with, I think it's fair to say, they're all with the idea of making these bigger tournaments more competitive, more exclusive, I guess you could say. Not quite as high numbers, and then the in theory, the quality of the players are going to be a lot higher.
Yeah, they're making it to where the Invitational is actually an Invitational. It's an invite only. Like, you won an IQ, good job, play this tournament for free and a bunch of prizes.
Yeah, so for anyone not familiar, before you could get open points from opens, from IQs, and what was the, how many did you have to get to earn an invite?
15.
50?
15.
You had to get 15, yeah. And most of the time you couldn't get points in an IQ unless you even top aided it.
Right. Right, but even then, like, I earned my first invite just from grinding IQs.
Yep. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, it was, in theory, you could have someone who won 1 point here and there and eventually got an invite.
Right.
So now instead, you know, it's the winner and no one else. It's more focused on, you know, yeah, the top dog of that tournament. So it's kind of a shame in that it's going to limit some people out, but that's sort of the purpose.
Right.
I'm okay with the changes overall. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I do think it makes IQs feel a little bit more significant, and it makes winning it feel better than top eighting it by a bigger margin now. I think right. A lot of tournaments, it's like just making top eight feels like you basically won. Obviously, you get more if you get first, but you know that's a great success, whereas now it's going to be tuned more to just the first place guy.
It doesn't reward the grinder so much, which is the part I don't like about it. You used to be rewarded for grinding several IQs, punching a lot of dollars into it, but now you have to win one. I can go to 10 IQs in a row now, not win a single one, top eight all of them. In the old system, that would get me an invite just about.
Yeah.
But in this new system, I'm not all about it. That's the part I don't like.
It is kind of weird because it is restricting to the grinders, which with so much variance in Magic, you do have a lot of people who are punching top eights but aren't, you know, sealing the deal that are great players.
Right.
So it does seem limiting to those. And, man, I almost wonder, like, I hope that this will lead to more changes. I don't know what the next change that needs to be made is, but it does seem like there needs to be more venues for tournaments, more ways to go up the ladder.
Yeah, well, and it went the same with the PPTQs, because the PPTQ system went away this year. We know it's PPTQs now, and then only the winner gets the invite to the RPTQ. So it kind of has the same feel. So now the two big tournaments for the weekend to grind on weekends and when you're not going to open or whatever are IQs and PPTQs, and both of them only reward the winner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's prizes for top eight and things like that, but now it's just the winner.
Yeah, which, you know, like we've said already now, I do feel like the top eight, they're all winners. Like, that's
right.
No small feat to top eight one of these events, especially, I mean, I guess it really depends on the turnout. Stores around here, for anyone who's like newer to competitive scene, hasn't been involved much or just isn't from our area, we're usually looking at 30 players, 30 to 40, somewhere in that range for IQs, PPTQs, things of that sort. So that leads to a pretty competitive fight for top eight. But then again, I guess if you're coming from an area where you have 12 people that enter or even eight, like now that does, I can see how in those scenarios, it does cut out more like newer players, things like that.
Yeah.
So I guess we can talk some about PPTQs too now, because I think all just like with new sets, really, and anything in Magic, when you read it on paper, it looks one way, but you don't really know until you see it in practice. How are you guys feeling about PPTQs so far?
I like the PPTQ system. Because they've increased the amount of tournaments that they're throwing based on the old PTQ system, there were maybe 2-3 PTQs a season,
yeah,
and the winner would be handed an invite. Now it's every weekend there's a PPTQ firing off. So now I've got 12 to 15 of these I can hit up. I get a win and get sent to the RPTQ, which then has a top 4 gets an invite, top 8 gets an invite if there's a certain amount of people there.
Yeah.
I like this a lot, and it can reward grinding to an extent, but again, it falls in the same patch of grinders aren't going to get rewarded like they were in the old IQ system.
Yeah.
The problem I'm going to have with it, and I have had with it, is you can't play a PBTQ after you've won one for the same season. So, like, this, for season one, I won a PBTQ very quickly. So for like a month, I just couldn't play Magic on the weekend because nobody was doing IQs. They're all doing PBTQs, and I can't play a PBTQ.
Yeah,
which is that's where I get my repetition in. Like, I do these IQs, right, yeah, so I can play every weekend, so I know the deck better. I find matchups and things like that. So it puts this hindrance, and the IQs are going to have the same feel now. Like, I win an IQ, oh, I got my invite. I don't care because the prize is, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm not getting more open points to get another invite. Like, I may not want to play an IQ. So it has the same thing where, like, it doesn't reward people for grinding, and now it also punishes people for winning a little bit. So
yeah,
it's kind of like
that. You have to kind of sit out for a while.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would say, though, I mean, I do in some sense kind of like the fact that the winner can't play just because it stops the same person from winning every weekend.
No, I understand why they
did
it.
And, you know, it helps get more players. But your argument, though, is very valid. How do you keep your repetition up? How do you keep that level of competitive play going into that RPTQ? Because then it makes it more difficult because you want it, yeah, like week one. And then you had, what, 6 weeks before the RPTQ?
For this, RPTQ hasn't even happened. It's later this month, and I won, like, week one.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, now there's PPTQs for the second season, so I can play those. But, yeah, I just couldn't play PPTQs forever.
Yeah, and I almost think that the issue that I kind of feel, and I think that all these statements kind of come back to, is that our IQs and PPTQs feel a lot more different than I thought they would. The turnout is a little bit different. Everything about it just feels a little bit different. I thought at first that PPTQs were basically going to become IQs that can send you to an RPTQ.
Yeah.
In a sense, they kind of are, but the crowds that we're seeing, the crowds are shrinking a little bit. I don't know if that's because of how frequent these tournaments are, or if people are just getting grinded out. I don't know what's causing it, but I think the hardest thing that we have to deal with right now is that, okay, so you have PPTQs. And then what do you have below PPTQs right now? FNM?
Yeah.
Weekly
and
tournaments?
And that's not a good way to practice for a deck for an RPTQ. We're trying to talk about the competitive Magic here. All you
or even
in
for
FNM.
Other PPTQs. Like, yeah, that's still. So there's this weird, like...
It kind of feels like FNM Plus.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's the best people, the end bosses of FNM, go to a PPTQ. They all together.
Yeah,
to
so
compete,
you have no middle ground. So you have nowhere else that you can go to keep grinding to get ready for the RPTQ. You don't really have anywhere else to go if you're done with FNM, but you don't feel ready for a PPTQ. There's no middle ground. And I think stores might need to be pushed to do more. There needs to be some other Saturday tournament they can do.
Yeah. Well, and then also, too, RPTQ is a different format.
Yeah.
So the first season of RPTQ, I won a PPTQ with Standard, played a sealed RPTQ.
I hate that.
Which I had a horrible pool, so I didn't have a chance. So then... this one, I won a sealed PPTQ because I had a good pool, and now I have to play a modern RPTQ. So, I also have to get modern games in the meantime to prepare for this RPTQ and grind standard PPTQs for the next season.
Yeah.
And
I guess that's my issue is, getting to the format changes, I do not like that. It's interesting in one respect because you do want players to be well-rounded. I mean, you are talking about a qualification for the Pro Tour at the end of all this, so you should be... well-rounded as a player, but sealed is... I do not like sealed RPTQs.
See, that would make sense if the Pro Tour was sealed.
Exactly.
If the Pro Tour, the RPTQ, and the PPTQ are all the same format, well, now we're all playing for something on equal footing. You know, some people are stronger in other formats than others.
Yeah, I'm going to RPTQ that's modern. If the Pro Tour is modern, cool. But that's never going to happen.
Well, that would make way too much sense.
Yeah. Sealed is just such a weird... because I know you have sealed GPs, but there's never been a sealed Pro Tour, right?
No,
it's draft. It's not.
No, Pro Tour has been Pro Tour up in the worlds. I'm pretty sure has had a sealed portion to it,
but it's far underrepresented compared to all other formats. Very underrepresented. So yeah, so to have a PPTQ that's sealed or an RP, both of those feel very weird to me. I don't really like that. Draft I would be fine with, but that's tricky. Yeah. Like,
well, then on top of it too, like the sealed PPTQ that I won was Magic Origins, but it was for Oathwatch or whatever the next Zendikar Pro Tour is, so it's not even the same sealed.
For the draft part. Same limited environment. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that might just be growing pains. They're still kind of working this out. They also had the issue where, so one season it was modern PPTQs, but you also had the option of doing sealed instead.
Right.
I don't like that either. Like,
yeah. And that's just, I think Wizards is going through growing pains with it, and maybe they'll straighten it out next year. Like, I keep waiting for an announcement that's like, oh, and RPQs are always going to be standard or something, like something reasonable.
Or always match the PPTQ.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of tricky because so many PPTQs feed into a single RP. I'm going tongue-tied here. But so many feed into an RPTQ that you would be locked into having modern for every single one, for every single store for, a few months there. So I can see why that was tricky to do out of the gate, but there definitely needs to be something cleaned up. I did see a store in the area was offering like a Saturday tournament with a little bit more prize payout than an FNM. I think that's a great idea. Like, I'd love to see more of those.
Right.
I'd like to see more IQs too. It's a shame that it's pretty much just PPTQs now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least in our area.
It's the new hotness.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was about to say. It's the flavor of the couple months.
Yeah, like, so hopefully everything will kind of even back out. Because, I mean, I know, like, because even with PPTQs, there's one most weekends, but, like, half the time, they're a good 2-3 hours away.
Yeah.
And I'll be totally honest that I'm not crazy about driving that far for a PPTQ.
Like, right. Because you're going to go there and there's 30 people and 20 of them are local and know exactly what each other's playing, so they have the best chance.
Yeah, so you're a little out meta. You don't know the area. Beyond that, like, man, weekends are busy. I'm not crazy. You know, you're committed. Yeah. If it's a 2-hour drive, that's 4 hours of the day gone. So I would be happy to go play an IQ locally and then just wait for a PPTQ within a half hour. But that just doesn't seem to be an option lately. It's made grinding kind of a weird, awkward spot now. Like,
And it may get to the point too where I don't know how feasible it is, but if stores get to the point where they have start having Sunday tournaments, like PPTQ Saturday, IQ Sunday, or something like that, start working with the stores in the area to make multiple events on the weekend
possible.
Yeah. That would be completely acceptable if something like that were to fire off.
Yeah,
instead of having PPTQs and IQs fight for Saturdays.
Yeah,
that'd be a great alternative. I know we're going tomorrow for a Sunday tournament. Sunday tournaments are fine. Yeah. Just a way to where it's not PPTQ or bust, especially with the how far apart they can be at times.
Right.
Yeah.
And then once again, it's one of those where, like, you grind off, two PPTQs, top eight, we don't get there, but then the third one you win. And oh, look, the next 3 weekends are also PPTQs and you can't play.
And then I think the other interesting thing too, though, with these PPTQs that we've been noticing are that people who are typically already qualified for the Pro Tour had other ways to get in. I can't remember their point system they would do, but there's a lot of people who normally would have already been queued in who now are forced to PPTQ.
Yeah.
Which has been very interesting because now you have like the metagames that some of these things are all over the place because you've got, local pros that are coming in to try to fight for these spots. And
So overall,
I am happy with the PPTQs. I was very happy about it when they first announced it. I thought it was a great idea. But in practice, it's created this weird issue that I don't think they could have seen coming. Like, I don't put it on Wizards by any means, but it has done a weird effect to the IQs, which, like, Star City has to be feeling that. I mean,
right.
I don't know how many listeners know this, but when we're talking about, like, IQs and PPTQs, IQs are Star City games, where PPTQs are Wizards. Yeah. So there is a bit of a weird battle here where Star City may be feeling some drops in sales. I mean, they sell IQ packages and stuff to all these stores, and
yeah.
In our area alone, we used to have an IQ, two a month at least, right?
Yeah.
Right. I haven't seen one listed in a while now.
And it's been 2 months since one, pretty much.
And talking to all the local store owners, because I shop around at a majority of the good stores where you can go for competitive Magic. And I asked them, hey, when's the next time you're running an IQ? Oh, we don't have anything on the calendar yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Star City, I mean, hopefully I'm glad that this is putting pressure on Star City because that'll make them move to change this. I'm sure they've seen a revenue drop from that. So hopefully they'll be looking for ways to, like, Sunday's a great option, things like that. A way to get those back into the mix because I miss IQs.
Yeah.
Trying to win a mat.
Yeah.
What that sweet, sweet mat.
Well, the elusive mat.
Another concept that could be thrown forward is FNMs could actually be worth something.
You know what, though? I like that a lot, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, no, it obviously won't. It probably won't happen. I shouldn't say obviously, but making them actually worth something? All right, now you can have a lot of people come into your FNMs. $10,
$15 paying? Yeah, oh, man, that'd be a dream.
The local game stores are on that, and Wizards kind of does reward you for going to FNMs with the Planeswalker points also.
Earning buys and GPs, but you get more Planeswalker points at higher competitive levels. Right. So like even, you know, at PBTQs or Grand Prix.
Yeah, you can knock out what you would have done in an FNM in a year in one day.
Yep. Yeah.
There's not FNMs have, you know, they're very casual. I noticed some players who are coming into the game, FNMs feel very competitive. You'll see one day. Give it a few months. How quickly you realize that they're not competitive hardly at all. And that's kind of what I was getting at with local stores. Like, I would love to see a Saturday tournament with a $15 buy-in that's not a PP, it's not an IQ, it's none of these. It's just better payout. It's a win-a-box. It's things like that. Yeah. Like,
and that's one thing I love about going to Opens also, because an Open isn't just an Open. It's a Magic convention.
Yeah.
And they fire off 8-man win-a-boxes. The one day, I think it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we signed up for a Modern win-a-box. We're Modern win-a-box 7. Standard is on Modern win-a-box 11. Yeah. Legacy was on Legacy win-a-box 2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just everybody signing up for them and pitching.
People want to play stuff like that.
Right.
Like, because, you know, we've talked about this before, but as you get more competitive, paying $5 and winning 3 packs is not worth an evening anymore.
No.
Like, it's sad, but true. When you're coming into the game, it's great to be able to pay, you know, just as little as possible and get some reps in. But like, for people who aren't aware of this, as you increase the cost to entry, and as you increase prize payout, you increase the competition.
Yeah.
Because players are more willing to spend their evenings doing this if they know they can get, you know, substantial payout, something real, you know?
Yeah.
6, 7, 8, 9, half a box, you know, things like that. So it would be great to have nights like that where we could go out and compete on a higher level. Because, yeah, it does. I've noticed, like, I think out of the group, I'm probably the one who attends the least amount of tournaments just with other, you know, what life happens. But yeah. I noticed such a huge disparity between FNMs and weekly things I am able to make versus, you know, when I make it out to bigger tournaments that, like, it's mind boggling. Like, I feel so rusty if I've only been playing these smaller tournaments.
Right.
But, so, I mean, any other thoughts on this?
No, I'm still not even 100% on the RPTQ system because, like I said, the one RPTQ I've played was sealed. So, like, it wasn't even good representation. Opened my pool, went, can't win, went home. Like, so I don't know. This one's Modern. I'm going to see if I like it better. I'm going to hold out my judgment until the end of the month when I have an RPTQ.
The only real hope I have for the IQ system is they're not taking away points from States, Regionals, or Opens. So if you still want to grind those, by all means, you can to earn your invite. It appears to only be hitting IQs. And they did have a compensation in their announcement also at IQs. They're going to be giving away retired playmats from the Open series. And at the, right? And then at the...
I wish we were a video podcast so that everyone could see my eyes rolling off the side of my head.
And then for the higher one, they're giving away 2 retired playmats.
Oh, jeez, what a deal. Do I get a Kraken token with it, too? Or?
After round 3, they make the announcement. But, that's...
All right, so this is... We've still got some time in this segment. I feel like we've covered this well. Let's talk about these horrible playmats. Like
the gimmicks.
Yeah, Tassipur, all the horrible puns.
There's an artist in Star City. It's just one girl. Don't know her name. If anyone does, feel free to send me an email. But she does all of that artwork. And for some reason, all the Star City players love this. No one else seems to catch on to it.
They loved it so much, they're changing Star City game nights. So they used to do 3 creature like token things and then 1 parody. They're inversing that. They're doing 3 parodies and 1 normal throughout each season.
Whenever I'm watching a Star City Games event and they show, here's Penguillian Click, his penguins, and they kind of look like... I just want to stab my eyes out with my pen. The first few I liked. Like, I was completely on board, but... Having one artist do all of these, I mean, and I don't care what artist it is, that's going to, like, I want to see something different.
Right, and on top of that, they're tokens that aren't real
things. They're not real tokens. There's no 1-1 penguin in Magic. Yeah, sorry.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, give me real tokens.
Yeah.
And make them look like I'm not going to be embarrassed to use these things. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not, I don't want to dig in on anybody who likes that style of art. I appreciate it from times to times, but it is very like, you can't do cutesy art for every single thing you make. Like, what is going on? Am I taking crazy pills? Like, why am I the only person?
How has this not changed? Celebrity selfie that was like 6 months past. Yeah, they finally remember that thing
Ellen did or whatever two years ago? Here's some cutesy animals. Dude, who cares? But, like,
I'm just curious as to how she's going to pull off 5'5 demon.
Never.
He's going to have like a bow tie on and some big old googly eyes.
It's going to have a clown nose, you know, honk honk.
And it's going to be like a 7'8 demon, so you can never use the thing. Like,
now, with the bad, though, one thing I do like that Star City is doing with their playmats is for states and regionals. I love the two-piece art playmats that they've been doing.
Yeah, the matching regional mat. I mean, top 8 payout mats I like a lot. Mats that you just get for going to an event, I'm not as crazy about. Like, the GP mats are kind of cool, but who doesn't have a playmat already? Yeah, the GP mats are fine, but Open's giving out mat. I'd rather just shave $10 off the price and call it a day. I don't want a Tassa per mat. I don't care. Like,
type of player, though, that loves this, and you'll see him at a big tournament if he doesn't go to your local game store world. He'll have a rolled up 30 mats thing and then just unroll the 30 mat thing. He's got this his play table 6 inches off the table itself, and he's playing up there.
Right, you can pick up cards with his teeth because it's up
high. It's so goofy looking, but there are players who are into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for every one of that guy you see 50 that just have, like, I have one mat that I've been using for 2 years now, at least. Like, it's got some wear and tear on it, and it looks great. We're done. Like, I don't need a mat for every open I go to, especially because, like, the open, do they have stuff about which open it's at? They don't, right? Because they do the same one for a few
it's
opens.
It's the open series. It's for each season.
Yeah, so it doesn't even have that GP feel of, like, here's the date, here's the location. Like, that's kind of reminiscent of, like, 80s bands with the concert t-shirts.
Yeah,
cool. Like, you know.
And usually the artwork's good. Usually the artist's there, so people want to get it signed. Yeah, so it's more like...
There's a lot more thought put into it.
Yeah.
The open ones feel very lazy.
Yeah, it's more personal. Like, this was my mat. I got it.
Plus,
this
GPs are huge. Yeah. Right. Like, you may play an open a month if you drive around. You may play an open every 2 or 3 months if you're just kind of lazy. Yeah. Whereas a GP, you're going to do like once or twice a year. Like, it's much more of an event.
And it's nice, too, to have them as like, I still play with my Eternal Witness mat from Grand Prix. So that was my first Grand Prix. It was modern. It was my first big modern tournament. I played Living In. Like, I can remember the first rounds of it. So I still use that mat. But, like, I have 3 Tasper mats. I couldn't tell you which one I got where or for why. Like,
I just have these things that collect up. That's Magic players. Like, we all have tons of junk at our house already. Like, we have cards that we don't know where they are.
That are old. Yeah, bad.
10 like, purple sleeves from 6 months ago. We don't need extra things to lay around in our house.
How about instead of a playmat, Star City also gets promo cards? Anyone?
Beautiful. Yeah.
Grizzle for hand type thing. Yeah.
Something like that would be a fantastic
addition. I'd rather have like a
hedron
crab than the Tassiper mat. Right. Like, I'll take whatever.
Can I borrow that hedron crab? I need it for modern.
All right. But yeah, so that's we're coming to time here. We'll get off our soapbox a little bit. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about deck construction. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. So for this segment, we're going to be talking about deck construction. Now, this is kind of a vague topic, so we're going to be a little bit all over the place on this, but it's a topic that has a lot of little bits of information and not so much a general overview. So for deck construction, like, what brought us to doing this is that we got a listener submission from Robert, and he was just asked, not Robert on the podcast, another Robert. Rob, stop sending stuff to us. But we got a submission from him, and he was just asking, when looking at deck lists, like, why sometimes you'll see 3 of a card, 2 of a card, 1 of a card, and not just straight 4 ofs. So, and that's probably simplifying your question some, sorry, but we'll get all your answers from that. So, guys, what situations would you run less than a 4 of?
I'm Alex.
Okay, no, we're, this is the second part of the segment.
Okay, sorry. You're saying Rob a lot. I didn't know what was going on.
No, it's just Rob and I this week.
Okay.
You ask you that. Rob, why would you run less than a 4 of?
Converted mana cost. If the card's too expensive, I'm not going to want it in my opening hand. A good example is Dragonlord Atarka. I'm not going to want to run four of him and possibly run into having two in hand at any given time.
Yeah.
Also, the legendary creatures as well. Yep. You may not want to run a full four. You might only want to go down to three, especially if you do want to play them in the case of Brimaz from Theros.
So anyone who may not know the legendary rule for any reason, you can't have two of the same legendary permanent on in play at the same time. So for so that's a great point. So like if you run four of a legendary creature, Pelucranus was one that was kind of weird. Pelucranus was legendary, right?
Yes, he was. Okay.
So because he doesn't feel like he would be, but anyway, that's a creature where a lot of decks would still run him as a four of because it was worth the risk. Having a backup was worth it. But then in certain decks, if the creature's not like an all-star in the deck, then four of's not really worth it because then you add on the problem that you can't deploy two of them at the same time.
Another prime example of this right now is in Dark Jeskai with Dragonmaster Outcast. He's a 1/1 for one red. Then when you have six lands, he makes a 5/5 dragon on your upkeep.
Yeah.
He's a one of because he's not good on turn one, even though he's a one drop. He's better late. They're using Jace to throw in the yard to get back Ojutai's command it back, things like that. So it's an occlusion, but it's not multiple copies.
Yeah, like, it's not a key part of the deck. It's more of like an extra bonus card. If you hit it in the right situation, amazing. There's only a one of in it, so you may not see it in a lot of games. So it's not really costing you anything to play it.
However, in this format, having one ofs and two ofs in your deck is very rewarding because we have extremely powerful card selection in the card Dig Through Time.
Yeah.
If you're in blue, you're playing Dig Through Time. This gives you the option to do that. When I have the probability of picking up seven cards, I've already drawn seven for the turn from the beginning of the game. Yeah. Going through several turns, I've gone through about 14 cards by the time I hit this. Yeah. I've gone through a third of my deck. Your odds of you hitting your one ofs are pretty high.
Yeah, and even two ofs at that point, you're pretty much guaranteed really to hit a two of. I mean, obviously you shuffle the deck, so who knows what's going to happen. But, you know, statistically overall over many games, you're going to see one of the two. So that's where, like, because there's even like toolbox style decks where you have some means of looking through your deck, tutoring, maybe just lots of card draw, things like that, where you can afford to look for these one of or two ofs in certain situations. Things that you don't want to hit every single game, but you want to hit when you're looking for it. So if you're not looking for that matchup, you can dig and move right on past it. No worries. If you need it, boom, there it is.
And cards that are rewarded are things like Bring the Light in Standard, Court of Calling in other formats, Green Sun Zenith and Legacy, things like that. The
Birthing Pod before, you know.
Right. Just things like that. So that those change deck construction to fit their needs. And that's what a lot of it is just fitting your needs. What does the deck need? Like even in Modern, I run a lot of one ofs. A lot of times in Twin, I'll have like a run of one of Spell Snare or like a one of Roast just because it's good when I have it. Like, it's one of those cards that's really good in certain matchups, and if I draw it, it helps.
So it's almost like pre-sideboarding to an extent. You know it's going to be good against a lot of matchups. It would typically come in as a one-of or maybe a two-of out of the side anyway.
Yeah.
So you throw it in the main because most games you're not going to see it. And then out of the games you do see it, most of the time it's going to be huge for you. It's going to help a lot. Dispel is like a great one for that in Modern. Like, I love seeing dispels in lists because especially like combo lists, like it'll come in handy. Yep. So, you know, when you're looking at like it's... I almost didn't know how to respond to the question at first because there's so many different reasons why you would have less than a four of.
Right.
So why would you have something a four of? Why is that the standard?
That's looking for consistency. You want your deck to do the same thing every game, like usually linear game plan, like this card is the best card in the deck or one of, you know, tied with the other four ofs. I want it every game if possible.
For example, when people were running the Pelucranus back when he was standard legal, how much did you value a 5/5 for 4 mana with a pseudo fireball effect? Turns out to be pretty high.
4 of all day.
Yeah. So I think looking at Pelucranus, that gives, I mean, I think always an understanding, like looking at what makes something a 4 of is a great way to figure out when things are not a 4 of. So, you know, we've covered a bunch of these now at this point, but that's really, I mean, when you're looking at it, that's what it comes down to. So we're going to open up the question a little bit more in this segment a little bit more and just talk about some other things with deck construction. What do you guys have a specific thing you like in decks? What do you like to see? What do you not like to see? Anything? Thoughts?
It's based on the deck you're running and like Alex went with the consistency you want to see, but also for some tournaments, it is that last minute decision of, you know what? I want to put this in the main deck instead. Yeah. Jerry, you had a great example of that at the PPTQ.
Yes, I did. Everyone in the room was running a Tarka Red, which was a very popular archetype, and kept hearing people talking about it. So I decided to move 4 Jetty offshoots in my mono green Eldrazi sideboard to the main board. Yeah. This was a very good decision.
Yeah, yeah. You top 8 at that event, right?
Second. Yeah, I finished second, only losing to Shaheen Sirani for the RPTQ.
Yeah, see, so I mean, that's a situation where deck construction varies a little bit. And I think every Magic player should go through these phases. And they do go through these phases, really, where at the beginning, Magic is such an amazing game where you have all these old sets, all these old cards. You just want to jam things together. Like, people's first decks look completely insane to players who have been playing for a while. We all made completely insane decks at one point. We thought they were amazing. And then you start to look at net deck lists, you know, pros lists, things like, I don't know why I'm doing air quotes on an audio podcast. But anyway, so you start looking at, you know, professional players list. And I know some people don't like the stigma of playing card for card, but that's a great place to start.
Yeah.
You should never stay in that idea or that mindset forever, but that's a great way to start, because then you can start to appreciate, like, oh, okay, now I see why they wouldn't want 4 of this, because I drew 1 this game. That's enough. I hit the second one. Now it's stuck in my hand. I don't need a second one. But after you've been playing those lists for a while and you really start analyzing it and figuring out why it's that way, that's when you start to do these small changes, small adjustments. Because at the end of the day, like, for most formats, for all formats, really, the decks are figured out. The best decks are figured out. Now, Modern, Legacy, there's some argument as new sets come out. That can get shooken up, new stuff can pop up, but it doesn't happen as much as most people think it does.
Right.
So for the most part, these decks are figured out, but as you adjust to different metagames and things like that, yeah, you can make these slight changes and it can change the entire day.
Yeah.
So deck construction is something that you're kind of constantly learning, but as you play more decks and more different archetypes and things like that, you'll start to get why these things are happening.
Another good example of choosing the number that you want to play is cards with Delve.
Yeah.
Like, there is a capacity for Delve. How many Delve can you play in Standard right now? Like, the big one with the Tarka Red now, Become Immense. They want to run it. They want it in their hand, but they're never going to cast 2 in a game, hardly. Yeah. Like, and then same with Dig Through Time. Like, you want it. Having 4 of them, like, you want to draw that card, yeah, but then you have 2 in your hand, you can only cast 1, and, like,
yeah,
you have to figure out the numbers for those and things like that, and it's usually not 4.
Delve, I think this is a really interesting where Murderous Cut was seeing some play for a while.
Mm-hmm.
See some modern play, saw some standard play, typically as a one-off, just for that reason. Like, you're going to get to Delve it one time, make it cheap, and then that's it. Yep. Most of these decks had, like, Dig Through Times and other stuff they'd rather be doing. But then you look at Become Immense in a Tarka Red.
Yeah.
It's a 3 of in most lists. And it's not because they're going to be casting 3. It's because they want to see at least 1. It's that critical to the deck. And that's what hinders it from being a 4 of, is that you don't want to see 2. So generally 3 is the number of, I'd like to see one and that's it. There used to be, there's something someone posted at one point that was for all 4 numbers. 4 was like you want to see it every game and maybe doubles. 3 was you want to see it every game, but not a second copy. 2, there was a theory behind it, but I can't remember. I don't know.
Gone. Gotcha.
But in general, though, these are great examples of, like, why 3 might be right for a certain build or a certain card. The Delve ones, it was kind of cool to see how decks played out, because they probably ran too many Delve cards at the beginning, both in Modern and in Standard. When what's it? That was Cons, where Delve came back.
Well, that was, everybody wanted Jam Tasker and Murderous Cut.
Everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, so clash a little bit.
People went a little crazy.
Too much on the Delve.
Yeah.
Treasure Cruise got banned from some formats. Not Diggs banned.
That was reasonable.
Some formats, but you know, we had to go through some growing pains of Delve's return.
Yeah.
But then it gets funny, because even when Delve came back, you saw older Delve cards being used again too that hadn't been seen in a while. So it's cool how something like that can shake it up. But anyway, let's get back on topic here.
Going to mana bases?
Yeah, we can talk about some mana bases. I'm going to let you guys kind of lead this one, because I hate building mana bases.
Me
Fair
too.
Enough. Okay, basically to start, you want your lands to be, for a typical mid-range deck, 24 to 26 is kind of where you want to be. Aggro wants to be lower, 20. And that's just, you want to cast your spells on time.
Yeah,
especially for mid range, it's crucial. You don't want to run too many lands, but if you don't run enough, you just don't play Magic.
Yeah, there's a sweet spot for every single deck.
Yeah, and mid range typically wants to play a land and a thing every turn for 5 turns, and hopefully
not see another land.
Yeah, exactly. You just draw playable cards.
Yeah, whereas, you know, like aggro, like you said, you're looking to one, two lands in a lot of builds.
Three, four,
and some bigger, you know, builds that go a little bigger depending on the format. But when we're looking at deck construction, going back to looking at lists and making adjustments, touch the lands last. Like,
absolutely.
When you're going under the hood on a deck, do not mess with those lands or the land count until you are very well into
your... I typically, like, when I'm brewing, I'm like, okay, it's a mid-range deck. I'll set aside my 25 land slot, hammer out the rest of the deck, then go into the lands. Which ones do I want? Do I need to go to 26 or 24 or whatever? And obviously, control sits at 27 to 26. A lot of times, they really want to ensure land drops and board wipes. But yeah, it's just one of those things where then you also have to factor in utility lands if you have them in a format. Things like Desolate Lighthouse in Modern is big in the twin decks and things like that. Things that are obviously a one of.
Ghost quarters, yeah,
things like that. Yeah, and in this standard, actually, people are running the Blighted Fin, the sack as a one of in the Esper control decks, which
that's the draw, right?
That's the
target player sacrifices the creature.
Oh, yep. Wow, nice.
Yeah, they're using it to get hexproof creatures that they can't normally hit and things like that.
Makes sense.
And just instant speed removal, which is
an edict, yeah. Speed edict, yeah.
But then you have to weigh in, okay, how many colorless lands can I run? Especially in Modern, are you trying to jam Cryptic? Like, do you need triple blue here?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. What are the demands of your
trying to play triple blue with four Tectonic Edge?
Yeah. Like, you just can't do it. No, you can't do things like that.
Maybe in a mono blue deck, but yeah.
sure. Yeah,
if you're looking at two or three colors, yeah, that starts to get very taxing.
I mean, even Merfolk has games where they get in a weird spot where they have two Mutavolts and Island, and they're sitting on Lords and no Vile, and they can't do anything.
I've sat across from that. It's a great game for me.
Great game. There are a couple things I like to do with deck construction. Three specific things. I like to take a curve test where I figure out what is the median converted mana cost of the deck. Like, say if I'm trying to get up to, you know, I have a 12-3 drops versus 8-4 drops and 2-5 drops. This is a good curve. Yeah. You know, most of my players are going to be happy on turn 3, some on 4, and then on 5 I might have a 3-mana play and a 2-mana play. That's one way I like to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
Another way I like to do it is I would like to figure out the average converted mana cost of the deck. So I took it upon the liberty of myself to figure out Storm's average converted mana cost, not 5 minutes before we did
Legacy,
this.
Legacy, not Modern.
Legacy Storm's converted mana cost average is 1.43. Usually that means I want one or two lands. So you have to take that into account, as to how often do you want to see a land in play. Then as for colors, I do the same thing as I add up all the colors I have from all the different spells I have.
Yep.
I have a 3-color deck. Let's say I see 5 black sources total. I have 10 red mana symbols and other cards and 7 green mana symbols. So I know now I need more red mana base, followed by more green mana base, followed by more black mana base.
And then also looking at, you have to look where the drops are. When what are my low drops? Especially in Jeskai right now, especially splashing black, you have to look at, okay, on turn 2, I want blue and white for Soulfire and Jace. Want to have that. Then when I hit turn 4, I need double red for Thunderbreak. So you have to like work out your mana base for things like that too. Like, where do I need to be for the curve on colors?
Yeah, because like, say you're running Dig Through Time and that's your only blue. This is hypothetical. But you're running Dig Through Time, you're running it as a 4 of, and that's the only blue spell in your whole deck. So you do the count, you're like, yeah, 8 blue, I need blue. But really, like, you don't need that till a little bit later. You don't need it on turn 1 or 2. Like,
it's a high drop, sure, yeah.
Yeah, you can get to it eventually.
And a big thing too is you don't want to weigh your deck with too many, like if it's a multicolored deck, you don't want to have like a whole bunch of Thunderbreak Regents. You don't want to have a whole bunch of like Dig Through Times. You don't want to have a bunch of double that, because that's really going to make your decision making when you fetch and whenever you're playing your lands and selecting your mana base all the way back in deck construction a little bit more tricky for you.
And that's when you look into things where, like, do I have to have this double cost? Do I have to have Dig Through Time, or can I run Treasure Cruise instead?
Yeah.
Is the one blue, like, is the double blue breaking me? Like, and things like that. Gideon versus Sorin right now, like double white, or can I just need one
white? Yeah.
They essentially do the same thing and make a bunch of tokens, Anthem, the team, you know. It's just what's better for the mana.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because there are sometimes when people will look at lists and go, oh, they should clearly be running this card over, you know, Dig Through Time, Treasure Cruise is a great one. Like, why are they just running Treasure Cruise, Dig Through Time? Like, and that's why. A lot of times it's because it comes down to a double mana cost symbol instead of just a single.
Yep.
and it just makes your mana base flow a lot more. I mean, we talked about percentages before, but it may come down to you have, you know, 5 games every month where you just don't hit that second blue and Dig Through Time's killing you. It's just going to waste in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's games you can just get mana screwed. Happens to the best of us. Can't really control it.
Right, right. It's gonna
but
happen.
For every game that you're mana screwed, there's probably a game where you fetched wrong and screwed yourself. And just maybe didn't realize it, just didn't build the mana base right. And you can fix these things just from the beginning.
Right, yeah. You can build. You can set yourself up from success when you're right, sitting there at your table working out your 75, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just anything that makes you less dependent on your mana, less dependent on hitting on specific turns is nice. If you can splash a color that's pretty much mostly late game, that's nice, things like that. But when you're looking at deck lists, though, that's just another variable to be aware of. Looking over them, why is it this card over this card, things like that.
Especially in mana base, too, why is this a one land where this land's two? Like, why is Shivan Reef a one of and Yavavaya Coast is a two of in this rug deck?
Right.
It's just, oh, I need more green. That's all it comes down to. Things like that.
And other things to take into consideration with your deck building is we'd mentioned delve cards. The best way to look at cards is to look at them in their worst case scenario. Like, how often do you want to cast an 8 mana Dig Through Time?
Never.
But I mean, you have to understand. Sure to, yeah. It's possible you can do it. I'm not saying I haven't done it.
But
you have to look at that. How often do you want 8 mana card jammed into your hand? Other variations on messing with converted mana cost. I'll go back to the new Phyrexia set with the Phyrexian mana thing. You know, with Birthing Pod, are you going to cast it as it's hard, 3 colorless, 1 green mana, or are you going to pay 3 colorless and pay 2 life for
it? It's a 3-drop.
Like, you look at it as a 3-drop, but in certain matchups, that changes.
Right.
So you have to keep those in mind. You know, Madness cards, other things along that nature.
Yeah, and one of the big ones for more standard-oriented is decks running Ugin and Dig Through Time. It's this weird thing where they're 8-drops. Worst case scenario, Dig Through Time is an 8-drop. So if you have an opener that's like Dig, Ugin, and some other cards, you may not be able to keep it just because you have 2 8-drops that are 8-drops for the most part. Like, all know Dig doesn't get cast for 8, but essentially at the turn that it's cast, it can be cast for 8.
Yeah, well then, like, even hitting multiple Dig Through Times, like, only one time has this ever happened to me, but I did actually draw all 4 Dig Through Times.
Wow.
And I lost that game very poorly. Like, what are you going to do? I started with one in the opener, and they all followed suit. But that's where it comes down to. Had I only been running 3 and I hit something else, I may have been very happy. And, I mean, it comes down to the deck. Like, most decks are never going to cast an 8-man Dig Through Time because they just can't.
Yeah.
I mean, in this standard, I don't even know how often Control's hitting 8 lands. Not as much as it used to. Like,
we're not revving. We're not playing the life game.
I mean, those days, you could have cast an 8-mana spell all day. But now in standard, like, you might pop it off every now and then for 8, but very rarely.
I'm pretty sure I had one agonizing game against you, Bobby, where you had 16 land on the ground.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's where I like to be.
Yeah.
It was miserable. And you're like, rev for 8, just starting to play stuff.
Let's get warmed up.
But yeah, so now in this standard, like 8-9 is kind of the cap. So, but anyway, we're getting a little carried away here. So looking at lists, I mean, it's a good habit to just pop up some top 8 lists and take a look through them, try to figure out what was going through their mind. I mean, 4 Siege Rhino is 4 Siege Rhino. It's good. Like, you don't have to spend time there.
No. How often do you want a 4-5 Trampler that Lightning Helix is someone?
Turns out you run 8
every time.
Yeah.
But, it is good to look at some of the non-4 ofs are the most interesting cases. Like, that's where you're going to learn the most about the deck. So, yeah, definitely pop open some deck lists and take a look and see if you can figure out why it's there. If not, play test a little bit, see if you figure out. But it was cool to get that question because it was a question where I read and my mind was like, wait, what? I don't even know how to type this back. Like, I think we have to talk about on the cast because there's so many reasons. Like, we got them all, right? We didn't skip any of them. There's some we're missing that we're just not
You can always just say it comes down to pet cards.
There you go. That's a great point.
Especially like looking at like Adrian Sullivan lists. Things like that. He always has a pet card.
Gerard Fabiano is all that too.
They have to look into that when you're net decking. Know who you're net decking, what their pet card is, and is it in there? Why?
Yeah. Like, sometimes you'll see a random one of that has no business being in that list. They just really enjoy casting that card.
That's honestly what I thought about Dragon Master Outcast at first, and now everybody's doing it. I'm like, okay.
Well, if you look, Dragon Master Outcast is a really funny one because I saw the first time he popped up on camera, and it was out of the sideboard. A kid was running one, and it was like a 13, 14-year-old kid who had made top 8. He was doing great. And I can't remember if they talked to him about it specifically or not, but I swear I remember the reasoning was just kind of like he needed a 15 sideboard card. He liked the card. Like, I don't think it was this really, mastermind plan.
Yeah,
like,
it's really nice with Oji Dice Command. I'll give him that.
It's amazing with Oji Dice Command.
Uniquely enough, both times it's been printed, it's been a player in standard. And it always has been that one-of spot.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, who knows? I don't know why the kid put it in there. But now, yeah, like you said, it almost cracked me up when I saw it on camera again the following week. I was like, oh, man, I guess this is sticking around. Like,
yeah, it's become a thing now.
It's a good card. I mean, with the point where you're Oja tying it back, like, they probably don't have removal for it. So,
And then creatures has always been that, where you can get away with three ofs. Like, Soulfire Grandmaster has always been a three of.
Yeah.
Well, just because, like, you don't, he doesn't give double lifelink and he's a bear on his own. So you don't.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's another good point. Like, some cards just don't give, they don't double up on their benefit.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah. But, like, so having two bears is not good. But, like, you want one for the lifelink. Like, you got to have it. It's good. It's really good.
Yeah. All right. Chris Chiodo has just been removed from the Snapcast team. He's no longer invited to any events.
Yeah. No, get in.
No,
you're in here now.
We're gonna work this.
And I'm Chris.
All right, so welcome. Chris has shown up here in the twilight of this episode. So we're talking about when we run something as less than a four of. So can you think of recently in a deck you've run something as a 1, 2, or 3 of? Why you did it? Something like that.
Most of the times I'd only run a 3 of something was. Mainly, it didn't work well with something else. So, well, like, one of the big ones, I think you guys have already mentioned legendaries, because if you get stuck with two in your hand, it's usually, it usually never works out for you. Another one, I believe you guys have mentioned, are the Delve cards, because the main Delve card I've been playing was Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get up there and use it twice. Something they're looking at now is Jace and Delve together. It's usually one's really good, but they don't always play well together.
Like Jace
flashing stuff back.
Yeah, because you have to double away to flash back, but he fuels it. Yeah. The same concept. The one I think we didn't touch on was Planeswalkers. Multiple Planeswalkers for the same reason as Legendary.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the same reason it was Legendary, but there are times when having the same copy of a Planeswalker is okay, because you just... minus a Planeswalker, play a new one, plus it, or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, like Elspeth in the old control decks is a great example, because that was your win condition. You didn't want her to... it was a 6-drop, so you didn't want to see it that early. Most of the time, you didn't even really want to see it on turn 6. Some games you did. Some games you wanted it like turn 9 or so. So you'd run a 1-of or a 2-of. Yeah. No, great example. Aetherling was the same way. He was a win condition. You didn't want him till late, so yeah, you ran a 1-of.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we've pretty much covered like... most of the scenarios, there's always going to be some oddball ones on there to keep a lookout. But so we're done with the segment. So that means it's time, guys. We've got the bingo ball set up. We're ready to go. It feels like Virginia State Lottery up in here. So how we're going to do this is, some people have multiple entrants. You cannot win twice. It just means your name is in there twice to win. So Rob is the bingo master over here. You're going to hear a horrible noise in just a second. That is the bingo ball spinning. So go ahead. Let's fire it up. We'll do one at a time. We'll do third place first. So here we go.
Yes.
All right.
All right. And the first two-pack winner.
The first two-pack winner is going to be Matt.
Matt, do we have a last name for Matt?
No, we did.
All right, if your name's Matt, you entered. You're the only Matt. Congratulations, Matt. Yeah, all Matt. Right. All right, let's see. What do we got next?
All right, next is number 7, Anthony Morris.
Anthony, nice. Nailed it.
We love you, Anthony.
You're great at any random situation. You're killing it. All right, so that's 2 packs, right?
That's 2 packs for Matt and 2 packs for Anthony.
All right, so here we go. The whole shebang is on the line.
And first place goes to Austin A.
Austin A. All right. Is he the only Austin?
Yeah. Cool. He is the, well, we actually had a last initial form at least.
Yeah. So there
not
we go.
Not matter.
But that would be the only Austin.
Double A. It, man. Double yeah, A yeah. like the battery gets four packs.
Okay. That's so true. You guys will be getting an email from us.
Keep an eye for an email. Feel free. Like, we just need some shipment information for you. I think some of them are local, right? Or just one of them.
Yeah, one of them. Austin
local, is. Yeah. So Austin, so if you just want to hit us up, and we'll figure out we're going to be at the same thing. We can just give them to you there. But for the other two, email us, you know, a good mailing address for you. Otherwise, we're going to send you an email looking for it in the next few days. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. Yep. Send us some address. Tell us where to ship it. We got some packs sending off. And for everybody else, man, keep an eye out. We definitely appreciate all the feedback. We got a lot of good stuff from this. So this will definitely be happening again. I mean, look, we bought a bingo ball roller, so we got to now, right?
We have to.
Yeah, we got to do something with it. We don't play bingo. Yeah, so like, what are you going to do? Anyway. So keep an eye out. We'll be doing some more contests like this. I think we're talking about doing some like less formal, just random giveaways for shares and things like that. But we'll bash out those details and we'll definitely let you know. So that is going to do it for us this week. As always, please check out our page. Please submit some feedback. You won't get anything for it right now, but we still appreciate it. It means a lot to us. We've used a lot of these suggestions to help kind of shape the show and decide what we're doing. So I'm going to go spend the rest of the night editing all this horrible noise that we've made today between doors and bingo machines. It's going to be a long night. But all right, guys, have a good week. Bye.
Oh, snap.